So thank you, Liz, and thank you all, and welcome to all of you online. I think we've also got people online watching. So it's a real pleasure to be here. Obviously, King's College is just around the corner, so I'm a local. I'm going to give you some perspectives from university perspective. As Liz said, I'm now at King's, but I've only been at King's for 2 months. Before that, I was at Sussex, and before that, I was at Southampton. So I'm going to bring some evidence from across my entire career to talk about what happens in universities and how we can be more porous and think about career progression and development of future leaders. So a little bit again about my backstory, and a bit like Tamara Finkelstein this morning, I'm going to talk about my father. I haven't got a story like Tamara to tell, but my father was also an engineer, and I think there is a theme there. And he was an engineer that allowed me and my sister, who's in the photograph on the left, to play in his lab. This was before health and safety. So I was brought up just being allowed to play in an academic laboratory on the Birmingham University campus. And I think that really helped me become sort of courageous. It helped me think I could solve problems. And he brought us up to think we could do anything we wanted. I had a big family. I'm the eldest of a lot of people. And I think, again, that made me realize that when you have a team of little brothers in particular, you have to put them in the right place and you have to make sure they all play to their strengths. Otherwise, the football game is not going to be fair. And I think there's a theme there that goes through everything I'm going to say today. I then became an oceanographer, a deep sea oceanographer. I did a PhD in oceanography, and I spent most of my career at Southampton, at the National Oceanography Centre, Southampton. Being an oceanographer is a bit like being an engineer. You have to build interdisciplinary teams of technicians and officers and crew on ships and PhD students and senior scientists. And you build that team for short periods of time, for maybe a month or 2 months if you're unlucky, on board that ship. You have very makeshift laboratories that things break and you have to fix them using the skills my dad taught me. And you work in really, you know, far afield in Antarctica, in the middle of the Pacific. And so I think, again, my scientific discipline has used a lot of those skills that we're all talking about today, about working in teams, working in interdisciplinary teams, building those teams and recognizing what each person's role in that team is. And then moved up the ladder. We've talked about moving up the ladder. I actually did that in a rather linear fashion. I know that's very old fashioned and maybe not many people in this room will do that, but I was privileged to do that, move up the academic ladder. And I'm now a senior vice president academic. And so this picture in the bottom right is from my role at Sussex, where it's still about people. It's still about building teams of people from across a wide range of disciplines, even outside science and technology, into arts and humanities and social science, and building those teams and getting people to work together. So I think that's really where I've come from. And I'm going to talk about essentially how we can use the science and technology to bridge the whole of society. Why did I come to King's? I came to King's because King's, and most of any of you that know anything about King's will recognize that King's has a massive amount of sort of health disciplines and is really strong in the social sciences, but actually doesn't do much in engineering and technology and science. And my role is very much about building that bridge between those two different disciplines, rebuilding chemistry, natural sciences, engineering at King's to actually solve societal problems, doing that translation from health through technology into science policy. And that's what really attracted me to this role, but I think it's how we need to work in society at the moment. So I was asked to talk a little bit about the key issues for careers in the sector. So I came up with this list, and there you can see the smiley face and the sad face. And I don't want to focus too much on one or the other, but I want to make the point that it is a balance. Those of us that work in universities have some of the best jobs in the world. We have huge amounts of autonomy. We essentially can do what we like as long as we can get funded and as long as we continue to publish. So we have amazing amounts of autonomy. We have ready-made networks that are global. We can join a university. I've been at King's for 2 months and I've got a global network of health professionals I didn't know before that I can tap into and build on that network, this incredibly powerful reach that the university sector has. And we also have a very clear mission. We have a mission for building that pipeline of talent that comes through into the science and technology sector. And we're part of that. They keep us young, those students that we're educating. And then we're turning those students into graduates that populate the world. So we have real social purpose. But there are negatives, and I do need to point this out. It's tough times in the academic sector at the moment. And any of you that are in the room that are thinking about an academic job will be really aware of this. And we just need to look at these challenges face on. We've already talked about the barriers to progression in terms of diversity. The academy is very, very white in some areas. It's very, very privileged in some areas. And we need to address those, how to build the diversity of the pipeline into our disciplines in science and technology. There is a cost of living crisis that our PhD students are directly being affected by. And again, we've done some great work uplifting the PhD stipend, but that won't be the end of it. And we've got to do that. We're going to have to review that and keep looking at this and make sure that the people at the entry level to our disciplines can actually live in London, where the cost of living is extraordinary. We've got precarity, those fixed term contracts, and people have to navigate more and more fixed term contracts as they move up the up that sort of ladder. And we've got to recognize that. So I'm not going to read all these acts that will depress you, but I guess my job in a nutshell is to minimize the things on the top left and to maximize the things on the bottom right. And I'm held to account by my colleagues across King's College and at Sussex before that and at Southampton. So our job is to essentially fix all the top left things. And again, I was asked to think about how to build a successful career in science and technology. And these are really what I wrote down, having thought about this a lot, having moved jobs a few times in the last few years. Again, I'm not going to read out the list, but I'm going to talk a bit about how I've framed this. And I think it's really important because I think this is relevant inside and outside the university sector. I think all of us need to be able to, and somebody else said this already today, work out what environment you thrive in and work out how to get into that environment. Or if you can't, work out how to change the environment around you so that it looks like the environment you thrive in. Now, I thrive in the university environment. It's not for everybody. And so I think it's that self-realization of what sort of environment you will thrive in, whether it's big fish in small pond or small fish in big pond. Everybody's different and everybody will have a place where they will thrive. And it's about owning that and creating that yourself, but working with others to do it. I'm a big fan of both coaching and mentoring, and there's a difference between the two. And I just want to explain that. I think, and when I say be your own coach, I mean, I'm a marathon runner. I know I don't look like one, but I am a marathon runner. And there are huge amounts of resources online that you can use to coach yourself to actually get yourself around a marathon. And I'm a living proof of that. So coaching is really important in terms of task-oriented, getting yourself match fit to do whatever task, whether it's the next interview, get yourself the next job, get yourself the next conference, get that grant over the line. Mentoring is a much longer term game. Mentoring is a much more sort of career long relationship with somebody that can advise you, help you. But I have coaches and I have mentors, and I often find my own coaches online. But mentors are relationships you have for long periods of time, and it's important to give back. So I mentor other people and I have a whole series of mentors, none of whom are in the room, but maybe some of them are watching. And those relationships are really, really important. And so don't think that when you get to be a senior vice president, you stop doing this. It's probably more important to just make sure that you're constantly what I call match fit, ready to get out there. I think it's all about connections. It's about building bridges inside and outside the academy. And we're going to talk a bit more about that, I think. But it's really important we don't sit in our ivory tower and we build those connections. I think that's been a real theme for today in terms of working, having porous boundaries so we can work with industry, we can work with the public sector, we can work with NGOs, we can work with all of our stakeholders. And if we can do that more effectively, we can innovate better in the UK and beyond. And I want to give just one example of that. So one of the things I was most proud of at Southampton was that, the way we changed the way we incentivized the promotion scheme in Southampton. We really broadened it out from being not a single sort of H-index, academic conference attendance, all the standard ways of looking for promotion up to professor. We broadened it right out. And it's only since I've moved to other institutions I've realized how innovative Southampton was in this way. And so people at Southampton can get promoted for their industry partnership work, for their enterprise work, for their education contributions, for their professional skills, whether they're a musician or a novelist. So there's a lot of different ways of moving up the ladder. Now, obviously, that's about implementing that locally. And when I was dean of the faculty in Southampton, I'm really proud that I saw people go out into industry, spend several years out in industry, bring those skills back and use that experience and evidence from that experience to achieve promotion within the organization. And until we do that systematically, until we do that across the board, allow people to move in and out of sectors, but recognize and reward their contributions from what they did, that may not be publishing papers in Nature, it may not be about getting that huge UKRI grant, and we can recognize that and reward it, we will change the research culture by doing that. And I know we can do it, but King's has some way to go on this. Sussex has some way to go on this. A lot of universities, I'm sure, that are represented in the room have some way to go on this. Okay, so that moves me on to movement between sectors. And again, we've talked about this, and I think I've started to do that rather late in my career. So I've become a non-executive director for CFAS, which is an executive agency of DEFRA. I know there's a lot of DEFRA people in the room. I found that fascinating to bring some of my science and leadership skills to add into the public sector and to contribute to developing strategy, turning science evidence into policy, working in that space. And it's been hugely satisfying for me. And I think I've added some value to CFAS's activity. I haven't gone as far as going into industry yet, and I think that'll be something really interesting to do. So all of us can think about navigating, adding different elements of a portfolio to our career. Don't leave it too late, would be what I would say. I left it quite late in my career. But I've already mentioned this. I think when I was in Southampton, I encouraged staff to make that leap, to either do secondments for 3 months or 6 months or 2 years. Try things out, get out there and take those opportunities, move in and out of the sector, because I think it adds huge value to the teams you work in, and it adds huge interest to your CV when you're looking for the next step. So I think there are many, many pathways up through that ladder. I happen to have had a very linear one. I predict that most people who are at the earlier stage in their career won't have nearly as a linear arrangement in the way they go. I think you need those connections and mentors and champions and coaches that could help you navigate across these different sectors, because it's not easy. The language is different. The expectations are different. But we are here as a essentially a community that could help each other along this journey. So my final slide is some personal reflections on leadership. And I think hopefully it will pull together some themes from what I've heard today. And I'm going to go back to my father. I learned a lot of what I've written down here from my father's approach to how he treated his parenting, it turns out. And I didn't realize that at the time. You only realize that as you get much older. But I think I've found that team leadership has worked really well in the university sector. That hasn't always been the case, but I think in the modern day university sector, you work in multiple different teams. So I work in a senior leadership team, I work in an executive team, I work in my disciplinary team, I work in et cetera. And those teams all intersect, and it's about enabling every member of that team to be the best they can be. And those leadership skills, I think I learned in the playground when I was a child, and I've essentially just refined them as I've gone on. I think my role is mainly, and again, this has been said already, it's about aligning those team objectives with the overall ambitions of the organization or the UK or the sector, whatever we're trying to do at the time. And so it's about clarification, and it's about making sure that everyone knows what their personal expectations are. And I'm making it sound really simple. In practice, this is hard, but it is actually really simple. And so I think the last thing to say is, I think it's about bringing your whole self to the room. And I think you've seen that today. We've seen some really impressive sort of personal anecdotes. We've seen people telling really personal stories about their journey. And that's really powerful that we can all do that and learn from each other. And again, this morning, someone was talking about storytelling. We need to learn how to tell those stories, but we also need to learn how to translate those stories so we can understand each other. But with that, I'll finish.